You're now listening to the Inside Out Podcast with Jimmy Hunt. Get it.
Hey there, and welcome back to Inside Out with Jimmy Hunt, the podcast to increase your mental fitness. And today it is another relationship episode, one of the cornerstones of mental fitness. And today we're talking about emotional intimacy. Yeah, the deep stuff. And because my girlfriend didn't want to join me for this, we have my wife, Libby Grace. Hi.
Hello, Jimmy Hunt. You made a funny.
You're going to help us crack the code on these real connections.
I'm a good co-cracker.
Awesome. Are you now?
I am. I just did the Wordle. Got it.
Well done. Streak of one. Congratulations. We are going to share some of our stories. We're going to dish out some tips, and we'll get to the nitty-gritty of what makes relationships tick on a deeper level. And so whether you're single or coupled up, this one will help you get closer to those that you love. So grab a comfy seat, do whatever you're doing, and we'll dive into the world of emotional intimacy. First thing, obviously, what the hell is emotional intimacy? Well, basically, when we talk about intimacy, the first thing most people go to is the physical aspect, physical intimacy. But emotional intimacy, it's a bit of a different ball game. It's the closeness and connection between two people who feel safe and secure with one another.
Lovely.
Right? And so that's why I'm saying that this episode's not just for couples, it's also for
relationships.
Single people, but this is for relationships. The closeness and connection between two people who feel safe and secure with one another.
Funny thing, when you said that, you're not the first person that sprang to mind,
well,
which
fuck
is.
Fuck you then.
No, I mean, because that's a given, but I think my brain was going, I have that kind of connection with some of my girlfriends and some of my.
I want to tell my girlfriend.
Guy friends. I'm sure you will.
Yeah. So that's exactly it. Like, good quality friendships have emotional intimacy as well.
Yeah.
And, like, imagine a relationship where you just feel completely accepted, understood, and valued.
Imagine it.
Imagine it.
Wouldn't that be great? Oh, the little imagination bubble I've got over my head.
And not just for the things you do, but for who you truly are at your core.
I mean, ding, ding, ding. Can I have one of those, please? I'm joking. Obviously, I have that.
It's about being seen and seeing other people in their truest form.
Mm-hmm.
Which actually really is, goes back to that, the Aroha story that
yeah.
I tell. To see someone's truest self.
Yeah.
And, right, intimacy. So, obviously, physical intimacy, important. It's one of the ways we express love and affection. My number one love language.
By a country mile.
But emotional intimacy, that is sort of the heart and soul of any relationship. It's the conversations that last until 3 a.m., the shared laughter over inside jokes, and the feeling of absolute safety when you share your deepest fears or wildest dreams. It's that shared vulnerability.
Yeah.
And so it's this unique connection that fosters a profound sense of closeness and belonging. It's what binds two people together. It's the glue that basically holds the relationship together, right? Otherwise, you're just fuck buddies.
Obviously.
Right? Or not great friends. Right?
Acquaintances.
It really is all about connection. And that's what we're going to explore today. Connection on another sort of level. Because when you build an emotional intimacy, it sort of moves from like more than just a partnership to something that is far more like a resilient and unbreakable bond.
Mm.
And that's obviously what we all want, what we're looking for. It's about being each other's support system, understanding each other deeply, especially when life throws curveballs at people.
For sure.
Now, that's what emotional intimacy is. A lot of people don't have emotional intimacy in their relationships, both intimate relationships and friendship relationships.
Or familial, even.
Or familial, absolutely. And so I have a list here that we'll go through reasonably quickly, which I have called common barriers to emotional intimacy. And so these are just things that stop us from having this, right? So after this, we're going to get into ways to create emotional intimacy in a relationship, but these are the things that are stopping it right now.
Yeah.
And so if you want to create it, you've got to stop the things that are stopping it, right?
Yeah, you've got to identify if any of these things exist for you. You're like, oh, that could be stopping it.
Yeah, because if I just gave you a whole bunch of ways to create emotional intimacy, but we didn't address this stuff,
yeah,
they might not even work.
Yeah.
So common barrier number one is fear of vulnerability. So basically a hesitancy to open up due to fear of being hurt, rejected, or seen as weak.
Mm.
Something I had a chat with a guy down on the beach the other day is in Mexican culture, being vulnerable equals being weak,
yeah,
as a man.
Yeah.
And so he's from Mexico City, and that's what he was talking about. Like he can't be vulnerable to his friends.
Yeah.
And I think I mentioned a guy in a couple of podcasts ago. I don't know if I did, actually. He was in a Temazcal with his wife, and they were on a little bit of mushrooms. And only a little bit.
Just a taste.
Just a taste. And he ended up having this epiphany and breaking down and crying, sobbing, in the Temazcal with just him and his wife. And just so for the people at home who don't know what a Temazcal is, it's basically like a Mexican sauna. So it's just like a dome with hot rocks that you put water on, steam. And so he was in there with his wife. He had this epiphany. He broke down crying. And his response was, don't fucking look at me.
Oh.
Like,
oh, he couldn't be vulnerable.
Don't look. This is his wife, the woman,
yeah,
that he loves the most. Don't look at me.
Oh.
And that's Mexican culture. That is not only Mexican culture, it's masculine culture in a lot of places around the world.
Yeah.
New Zealand, exactly the same.
100%. And I think I couldn't think of one country where that doesn't exist except for some of those really amazing tribal communities.
Yeah. But there's a fear of vulnerability.
Mm-hmm.
And that is a barrier to emotional intimacy.
Yeah, obviously. That made me sad. You haven't told me that story.
Right. So I kind of said it on the podcast. Look at that. New story for everybody.
Yeah, well, that's a huge thing.
Yeah. Number two, communication issues. So basically inability to effectively express your thoughts, feelings, or needs, which leads to misunderstandings and disconnection.
Mm.
Communication issues. Imagine that.
Oh my God.
Right? Something we've talked about extensively here in our relationship episodes. If you boil literally almost everything in a relationship down, it comes out as a communication syrup.
100%. Delicious.
Yummy.
My favorite flavor.
Number three, past traumas. Previous negative experiences in relationship can lead to walls being built around emotional openness.
Yeah,
obviously.
Understandable.
Obviously. And what I found interesting about you and I, Libby, we're weirdos. And at the start of our relationship, both of us had come from cheating partners.
Mm-hmm.
And yet we didn't let those past traumas stop our emotional intimacy at the
start. Yeah, that is always something I reflect
on. We still don't understand that.
No,
don't know why we did
just,
it.
Was that, I mean, well... You can,
magic, but...
Yeah, magic.
Yeah.
But it was definitely something I reflect on a lot about we should have both been quite guarded,
yeah,
in, you know, in a logical world, but we were both like, no, ready to trust.
Yeah,
we're all going good. All in.
Yeah, which segues into number four of mine, which is trust issues.
Oh, yeah.
So
yeah.
Similar-ish.
Yeah.
But those trust issues, obviously it's hard to be emotionally intimate with someone who maybe has cheated on you in the past, but you've taken back,
yeah,
or you know, just been dishonest in any way.
Yeah, I just had some flashbacks. Oh.
Yeah, number five, emotional baggage. So unresolved emotions from past relationships that can prevent individuals from fully engaging in a new relationship.
Do you know what? Right. I don't know if this is the end of the list, but hearing this list, I'm like, how is it possible that us humans are able to have any emotional intimacy? Because we've all got a supermarket shopping bag full of this stuff, each of us.
Of course. And it's not the end of the list.
Oh, number six, it goes on.
Lack of self-awareness. Not understanding or recognizing one's own emotions can make it difficult to share them with others. Lack of self-awareness is a barrier to pretty much fucking
everything, to life in general.
Yeah. Number seven, busy lifestyles, right? High stress lives and busy schedules can leave little room for emotional connection and sharing.
Yeah, I imagine like a person compartmentalizing their life. I'm like, I'm busy, I'm at work, I don't have time for this.
Yeah, imagine five kids, both parents working.
No thanks.
Don't even want to imagine it.
Sorry, that was really harsh. Never. No.
But imagine five kids, two parents working, and then trying to
connect
an emotional intimacy.
Yeah.
So because we're going to go through
how
the ways to building.
Yeah.
And you're like, whoa, you've got to actually find some time for these things, right?
Yeah.
And so super busy lifestyles can make that very hard.
Yeah.
Number eight. Cultural or societal norms.
Yeah. Obviously.
We just discussed this. Now, the machismo culture here in Mexico, just the masculine culture, so many places around the world. So when we talk about barriers to emotional intimacy, it's usually men. Men are usually the barriers to emotional intimacy in those conditions. Number nine, a new one. Technology overuse.
Oh, yeah. Interesting.
So basically excess use of digital devices, whether it's phones or computers or back in the day, maybe even TVs, right?
Yeah.
Number 10, differing emotional needs. So you might just have different ways of expressing emotion, which lead to a gap.
Mm-hmm.
Number 11, obvious substance abuse. That comes into trust issues, that comes into past traumas, that comes into a bunch of things. But substance abuse, if you are depending on a substance, it can really be hard. So, you know, it's very hard to connect emotionally, intimately with a drunk, for example.
Yeah, I mean, just like biomechanically, it's difficult to have a conversation with somebody who's currently in that state.
Yeah. 12, lack of emotional skills, just not having the tools to be able to understand and navigate emotions healthily. And unfortunately, so many people have never taught these things, never understood these things. And so some people can have a lack of emotional skills. Three more, unrealistic expectations. So basically holding those unrealistic expectations can lead to disappointment and emotional withdrawal.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Number 14, intimacy anxiety. So just anxiety around being intimate in both physical or emotional, which probably comes back to past traumas. And number 15, last one, perfectionism. The desire for everything in the relationship to be perfect can really make it hard to connect emotionally.
Yeah. As you've been going through this list, it's really interesting. My little brain has been having these little flashes of the person that this relates to in my life.
Oh, yeah.
And it's like, sometimes it's me. Yeah, for each one I've gone, that's that person that I know. That's that person. It's really fascinating to see attributes. And then my brain goes further and is like, oh, and I can understand why, because this for that person is real. You know, like it's quite an interesting list.
But so you can understand why it's hard to emotionally get intimate with them.
Get on a deeper level than surface stuff. Yeah, 100%. Or the fact that I've never, I mean, I try with all of my friendships and relationships too. I mean, I'm a classic oversharer. I go deep real quick.
That's the boundaries episode.
I'm still
porous.
Super porous. But yeah, thinking of the friends that have popped into my head when you've been going through that list, I'm like, oh yeah, that person's there. I'm like, oh, no wonder I've never really got past like phase one with them. And no wonder they kind of ran away when I started telling them all my deepest, darkest. But yeah, it's a very interesting list, because a lot of those things I didn't really think about when you brought up that topic. I was like, oh yeah, there's probably this, 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 and this. And there's probably eight more things on that list.
Yeah, you're like,
expecting.
This is the end of the list.
Yeah.
No, it's not.
Yeah.
That's just 15.
I mean, we're screwed. Let's face it. I'm really excited to hear the how-to because this sounds quite like doom and gloom
there
to
are
me.
A lot of, well, I was saying, there are a lot of boundaries to emotional intimacy.
Or barriers, you mean?
Yeah, sorry, barriers to emotional intimacy. And so I guess, first of all, if you would like to be more emotionally intimate, you have to address these barriers,
mm-hmm.
right? You can't just go, oh yeah, that's me, onto the building,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
Like, because they will get in the way.
They'll get you. They always do.
And so, like, basically, as you've said, everyone's got some of these and they all manifest their ways into relationships and they can lead to, you know, the disconnection, misunderstandings, a lack of deep emotional engagement, right? And so each one of those you need, and don't have time, don't have resource, don't have everything to go through each and every one of those and break them down. They're all an episode in themselves.
Yeah.
But, you know, if we pick something like, you know, overcoming the fear of vulnerability, right? So like a hesitancy to open up due to fear of being hurt, rejected, or seen as weak. The easiest way to overcome something like that is to start very small.
Mm-hmm.
That's basically the answer for so many things, right? But if you're trying to overcome the fear of vulnerability, what you do is find the safest person, who's hopefully the person you're trying to become emotionally intimate with, and share just a little bit.
Yeah.
And see how they react.
Yeah.
See what they do. If we take this guy I was talking about in the Tamas Kao, like he kind of jumped in the deep end of being vulnerable, right? And so if he was actually trying to overcome this fear, he could take small step by small step, right? And just start by sharing little bits of emotional vulnerability with his wife, piece by piece, right? And you can, I'm making stuff up, but you'll be like, hey, honey, did I ever tell you that, you know, when I was seven, like I got lost in the mall and it really quite messed me up for a while?
Yeah.
And she's like, oh, really? Like, she's not going to laugh at seven-year-old you.
No.
Right? Like, whose parents lost him in a mall.
Yeah.
And so you're like, oh, well, she didn't react crazy to that. She felt care and empathy and love for seven-year-old version of me.
Mm-hmm.
And you're like, oh, so I was safe to share this little piece of vulnerability. And then you're basically building confidence. And so then, you know, a few days later, a week later, hey, honey, did I tell you that I'm actually kind of a little bit scared of spiders?
Yeah.
And she's like, what? I didn't think that of you. And you're like, yeah, like, I don't know why. It just kind of messes me up. It's like, oh, yeah, well, and she doesn't make fun of you. She doesn't, you know.
She just gets the jar and the little bit of cardboard. She takes the spider outside.
She gets the spider outside. We actually have that as a problem here. We've got spiders.
Many.
Some small ones and then.
Tarantulas.
Tarantulas. Libby didn't like the tarantula.
I didn't mind it, actually. It was huge. And I thought it was kind of cute. I just didn't want it crawling on me in the night. Like, that would have done me. I would have, and you were not
Jimmy,
here. You were in New Zealand at the time.
No, I got it off the wall.
Oh, that was the second time it was here.
Yeah.
I sent you a photo of the first one.
By the cat.
Yeah, and I said, go take that to where I put the other one, which was about half a kilometer down the road in somebody else's house.
Yeah, but that's the point. Overcoming any of that, little steps by little steps, right? So whatever, if you're sitting there and you've like, oh, ding, 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 this one was a really big one for me, then that's something you're going to have to go and start working through.
Like a little bite out of it.
Yeah, whether it's a busy lifestyle or trust issues or past traumas or, you know, substance abuse or whatever it is, like these things have to be dealt with before we can build that. Not exclusively. You can still start building, but just understand that there's stuff that's going to get in the way.
I feel a little bit like even with those barriers in the way, whatever they are for you, if you start just going, okay, well, I'm making a decision to have more emotional intimacy in my relationships, and you just start doing it.
Yeah, I agree.
It kind of flows on from that, where it's like, okay, I'm just going to practice. I'm going to make it my discipline is going to be just to be more emotionally like available and emotionally intimate with people.
Yep.
You kind of might end up, those things might fall away by the side without having to address them directly.
Yeah, it's the be, do, have sort of
exactly
matrix. Yeah, so basically it works as be, do, have. And so most people believe that if they have a thing, so like more time or money or love or whatever, then they can finally do a thing.
Mm-hmm.
So like write a book, take up a hobby, go on vacation, buy a home or whatever those sort of things are. And then that will allow them to be a thing.
Mm-hmm.
So happy, peaceful, content, and love, whatever. And so what we really need to do is kind of reverse that around the other way. And so basically havingness does not produce beingness.
Right. Of course.
Right.
We've talked about that before.
Yeah. But it's the other way around. Beingness can produce havingness.
Mm-hmm.
And so first you need to be the thing. So you need to be happy.
Yeah.
Or knowing or wise or compassionate.
Mm-hmm.
And so I do this all the time in terms of one of my goals is being wise.
Yeah.
Right. So I just be wise.
Yeah.
Right. And it sounds strange, but hear me out. And then, so if I just be wise, then very soon I will start doing what winds up bringing me the things that I've always wanted to have.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So I'm being wise. So I start doing the things wise people do.
Yeah.
And then I start having the things wise people have.
Right. Wisdom.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. So just because I be wise, then what do? I read books that will help me be wiser.
Yeah.
I engage in conversations that will help me be wiser. And then in the end, I have wisdom.
And your biggest one that you've forgotten to say is you pause between the question and the answer. That's where your wisdom is, right?
Yeah. Yeah. That was.
So that's what you do. That's your practice.
Yeah, that was a thing that came to me during a meditation. The distance between thought and action or stimulus and action is wisdom.
Mm-hmm. So you concentrate on when you're posed with a situation, you sit with it for however long, a few seconds, a minute, and then you speak.
Yeah, and so that's how I end up.
As wisdom.
As wisdom, but you can do that for anything, right? Yeah. So if you want to be happy, then just be happy.
Yeah.
So then you do the things that make you happy and then you have happiness.
And that's, I mean, it sounds stupid to say, oh, just be happy. Just don't be sad. And it's like, yeah, okay, it's a bit complicated. But to be happy, what would you do? Just smile.
Yeah.
Like that's
exactly.
That's all you would need to do.
Feel the emotion.
Just go, okay, well, I'm not happy right now. I want to be happy. What does happiness look like? Smiling, laughing, maybe a fake laugh, like to get you there. I know that these are two very specific examples that are a little bit more complicated, but you can apply that to everything. It's like reverse engineer it.
Yeah.
From, oh, what would I need? What would being this look like? Oh, it would be that. Oh, well, if I do that, then like you said, the other things follow.
Yeah. So there was a long tangent away from, yes, we need to overcome a lot of those barriers.
Mm-hmm.
They're worth looking into. They're worth fixing. But now that we're going to do the building emotional intimacy segment, like just do these things.
Yeah.
And that will help move through some of those barriers as well. All right. So what have I got? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. I've got 8 things that I have put in here for building emotional intimacy. Number 1, regular check-ins. Well, doesn't that sound fucking simple?
Yeah.
But I suggest setting aside time regularly to talk openly about each other's feelings, challenges, and experiences. And so then we also want to highlight the importance of active listening during these check-ins.
Mm-hmm.
So people I have been building emotional intimacy with recently is my men's circle, which we did a podcast on reasonably recently, a few weeks ago. And so I'm obviously building emotional intimacy with them. And we have regular check-ins, as in once a week.
Yeah.
We have our circle. And so that is basically a regular time. And then, as explained in that episode, you have 5 minutes each to go around the circle, and you talk about your highs, your lows, and how you're feeling mentally, emotionally, spiritually, and physically this week. And active listening is no one else is allowed to talk.
Yeah.
In that time.
Yeah.
So it's just 5 minutes of uninterrupted, this is how I feel, these are my emotions.
Mm.
And not that it's a thing, but quite often at the end, I especially will do this, is I will just say, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Like, because it's not my turn, and it's not, and it'll be the next person in the circle to do 5 minutes next. But just that little acknowledgement at the end of like, oh, cool.
Yeah.
Well, thank you.
Thank you for sharing.
Yeah, is really good. And so, you know, this circle creates emotional intimacy just by doing that.
Yeah.
And so, like, we could do this, and we kind of do this, but like dinner, for example.
Yeah.
Can be a very easy place where you're in the same place at the same time. Breakfast, you're rushing.
Yeah.
Lunch, you're not in the same place. Dinner, you are. So no phones. And you actually, and again, this has to be explicitly communicated or else people don't understand it, which is, hey, let's make this a time where we talk about our feelings, our challenges, our experiences, and we just listen.
Yeah, because you can feel a bit ambushed if you're having your dinner and somebody starts offloading on these like really emotional things or
exactly
or whatever. But
yeah, that, well, it doesn't have to be dinner. It can be at any time, but just make
but
it, that
but
a thing.
You both know what you're going into.
Yeah. And so when I said it and everyone went, oh, that's a pretty mundane suggestion.
Mm.
I ask you this question right now. What percentage of relationships do you think do that?
not many.
Yeah. Like really not many.
Yeah.
Like 1%.
Yeah.
And so might sound a little pedestrian.
Mm, it's very important.
But it's important and you're probably not doing it.
Yeah.
Number two, a thing that we did an entire episode about, one of my favorite episodes, something that I talk about all the time on my chats at the beach, something I talked about during my Te Araroa podcast episodes, the 36 questions that lead to love.
Oh, great, yeah.
And so this is a whole thing, Dr. Aaron trying to make people fall in love, came up with these 36 questions that are increasingly vulnerable as mm-hmm. they go along. And I would highly recommend any couple do this. And I would highly recommend anybody just who wants to have more intimate conversations with friends, just go and pick questions off the list.
Yeah.
And start just dumping them into your conversations.
I feel like if you do that, you seem like a more interesting person.
Of course.
Oh, that person asks great questions.
Yeah. But the really big takeaway, so Dr. Aaron was looking to make people fall in love.
Yeah.
And the formula he ended up figuring out was in order to have love, you have to have connection.
Yeah.
And then in order to have connection, you have to have shared vulnerability.
Mm-hmm.
And going back and forth on answering these questions that get more and more intimate and more vulnerable, that was his way of creating shared vulnerability,
yeah.
which worked and showed that these people's emotional intimacy grew really, really strong into a deep love. And so I think that if you would like to create more emotional intimacy, go through those questions. We did that episode. They were on our date night questions.
Yeah.
And I'll put the link in the show notes, but jimmyhunt.com/datequestions.pdf. That is a list of these 36 questions and then another 100 or so that I just found and I scoured the internet for. And Libby and I would go on date nights on Friday nights and I would ask these questions to her.
Yeah. He'd pull out his phone and be like, oh, he's off texting someone again. And then he'd be like, oh, no, it's question time. Yay. Yeah.
And so both you and I learned so much about each other.
Yeah.
Through those 150 questions we ended up doing, or 200 questions.
And it's like over the years that we can go back over it because some of my answers have changed. It's really, really fascinating because I was like, oh, you've asked that question before. I was like, actually, I feel differently about that now, or I have a different answer to that.
Yeah, exactly. You go back to a different time in your life and go, oh, no, actually, that was the time that...
It's really fascinating. Yeah. Like, it's not just a one and done. They keep on giving. I mean, sure, there's some of the same, which will never change, but no, it's worth revisiting even if you've done it before.
Yeah. Definitely scientifically proven one of the ways to create the most emotional intimacy.
Created some surprises when we did it. The first time, I think I even remember the very first time you did it. And I was like, oh, wow, that's interesting.
You surprised yourself or I surprised
you? Both things. And one of the things I complain about with you is that you have all these stories, but you would never tell me a new story. I'd be like, tell me something different. I've heard this before. And then we'd go out in groups, you'd be talking to people and I'd hear the same story over and over, that's what you do.
It's my greatest hits.
It's your greatest hits. But then we would get these questions and then occasionally you'd go, oh, actually,
I haven't thought about that in years.
Yeah, and it would be so great for me because I'd be like, this is a new story. Oh, this is so good.
My B-sides are also fucking awesome. Jesus Christ. Laugh harder, Libby Grace.
You're real funny.
Actually, we'll just skip ahead because that sort of just came up there, which is regular date nights.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Right? Stress the importance of dedicating uninterrupted time to each other.
Mm.
Especially if you've got kids.
Yeah.
Leave them home alone with an iPad. I don't care.
Find but it doesn't have to be a night either. It can be any time that works.
Yeah, true.
And you could even, if all you've got is 30 minutes in a week, that's doable. Grab two of those questions and ask two questions and that's it. And you've done, you've done it and it might lead to more, but
but that's the quality time, right?
Yeah.
That's one of Libby's big love languages, quality time. And so many people's love languages. Next one was that number four we're up to. Shared hobbies or activities. So basically, a way to create shared memories and experiences.
Mm-hmm.
And so these can lead to sort of more organic and deeper conversations and bonding.
Yeah.
And you and I are the opposite of shared hobbies and activities. Like, we are the opposite in pretty much most things.
Except
when my wife came to me a few years ago and went, I want to play tennis.
Yeah.
I was like, no. I want you to teach me how to play tennis. Oh, no. No.
And then what happened?
I sent you off to another coach.
You did. And I learned terrible technique and habits.
And then I've spent the last couple of years trying to fix it.
You've spent the last couple of years with your head in your hands going, oh my God, I wish I'd coached her from the beginning. I should have listened to my wife.
Yeah, I didn't know. I wasn't sure how coaching my wife in a technical and complex sport like tennis would work out.
It's had its moments.
And so now I coach Libby 4 mornings a week and for an hour and a half. So
it's a lot of tennis.
It's a lot of coaching because you also play your games
I know.
Outside of that.
A little bit obsessed.
And so, like, again, I was a little bit apprehensive. I didn't know how it was going to work out. But now we have one shared hobby.
Uh-huh.
It's something that we talk about a lot.
We do. We discuss the scores of random players who we've never met.
Yeah. Like, there's all sorts of things. And even just, you're like, oh, I saw this coaching tip video. Yeah. You know, can I do this? I'm like, no, that's a stupid technique from a stupid person. Or, yes, that's really cool. And we should try that.
Yeah.
And I think we've really learned to communicate better because of it, especially with a coach / student relationship.
Because it's a different dynamic.
You
can't go into it as husband and wife. Like, we've learned that the hard way.
Yeah.
It's really awkward, especially when I'm sharing a class with somebody else.
Like, stop fucking arguing with me. You're wrong.
Just listen to me and I'm like, but I don't want you to be right.
Yeah. It's like, because there is, you know, rightly or wrongly, there is a Grand Canyon chasm between our knowledge base in this particular activity.
Yeah.
And so it's
We've
not.
We've learned a lot about it.
It's not very often that I am wrong in the tennis. And tennis is a really big thing for self-awareness too.
Like, oh,
it's
completely
very hard for you to be able to see yourself play tennis.
Yeah.
And you're like, I'm not doing that. I don't do that.
I am doing what you tell me.
And my classic one is, cool, I'm going to go get the camera.
You do video
You're like,
me.
No, I don't want to be
video.
No,
I don't want to see. I have another thing that you've missed in our hobbies. It's interesting when you said that. I was like, oh, I wonder what you're going to bring up. And I thought maybe tennis. But then the other thing, and it's not really a regular hobby that we have, but it is something that we do together and we are good at.
What?
And it's like what we're doing at the moment currently with renovating or making stuff. I call it Arts and Crafts Day, usually. But throughout our relationship, we've had things in the house that have needed to be built or done or whatever. And at the moment, we are changing up some doors. And so you're doing the carpentry part of it, and I'm painting and doing all that sort of thing. And we're designing, we're creating stuff for our house. Like, we're changing things to make them have more of a flavor of us.
Yeah.
And we've done that throughout our relationship in different homes we've lived in, where, you know, we've got an item of furniture.
Built and tables, built benches.
Yeah, or we've
built,
bought something on Trade Me, for example,
and upcycled
it. And that, for me, is huge quality time. It's us both being creative. It's us both using our hands and I really, really, really enjoy it. And I really enjoy the interaction of, what do you think about this? And this is my idea. And sometimes we disagree on how it should look.
Yes.
But it's been a really great thing in our relationship that we do. Obviously not as a regular hobby, but something that when it comes up, I get excited about doing with you.
Does it lead to more emotional intimacy?
It does. Because we end up, I feel more connected to you when we're working on a project together. Was a huge thing for me, is feeling like I'm part of a team in my relationships.
It's a big thing.
And so us making decisions together, planning our future together, what we want our home to look like, those are massive. Like, just thinking about that, it fills me with this lovely, lovely sensation of, this is us creating our space, our home, things that we love to look like, that are visually pleasing, aesthetically beautiful. Like, we both love things to look cool and different and a bit weird. And, you know, people will come to our home when we're finished with these particular projects and be like, this is so you.
Yeah.
Us guys, we have our own flavor. It's very different to what other people might accept or like, certainly not vanilla. And I get a huge satisfaction from doing those projects with you. So for me, I feel more connected to you at the moment, even though the work is difficult and it's taking us a lot longer than we expected. I feel closer to you right now because we're doing a project together.
Yeah. And I will eventually post some photos of our house to my Instagram.
Yeah.
People like, you live in Mexico? Like, yeah, I just never post anything really from
except for
here.
The beach.
Except for the beach, yeah.
Sometimes you're hiking stuff.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah. All right, next one. Expressing love in the partner's love language. We've done an entire podcast on this. We've talked about it a million times.
Just do it, guys.
But it is the path to emotional intimacy.
Yeah, you have to. That should be number one for me.
Exactly.
Oh, no, wait, was the first one communication? Because that's always number one. But communicate in the right way.
Yeah. If you don't know about love languages, go listen to the podcast that we did on that. Go to 5lovelanguages.com and do the quiz and find out what yours are. Blah, blah, blah. It's really fucking important. All right. Last three. I've got a silent communication exercise. So this is something that you might do once or occasionally, whatever, which is spend some time communicating only through non-verbal cues like gestures, touch, and facial expressions.
Lol.
In order to enhance understanding and empathy.
Yeah. Okay, good.
Now, I just read about this somewhere. We haven't done it.
I'm really fascinated how this is going to go with us. It's going to end in you just ruining the whole thing by like doing something stupid, and the whole intimacy will go out the window, and I'll just be like, oh my God, there he goes again, pulling weird faces.
Exactly.
You are the ultimate ruiner of romantic and intimate moments.
Correct.
You just, there's obviously some.
I'm not serious enough.
There's some kind of thing inside of you that's like, no, this is like too serious or too whatever. Yeah. And then you're like.
But if we psychoanalyze that and we go back to the barriers to emotional intimacy, you wouldn't say this is me, but I feel that this is probably the result of a fear of vulnerability.
Yeah. And I would say that actually. I picked you a mile away.
Yeah, but if you said, hey, does Jimmy have a fear of vulnerability? You'd say no, because I'm very vulnerable all the time with so much stuff.
But you haven't always been.
Yeah, but that's a particular level maybe at something that stops our emotional intimacy being even deeper.
Yeah, I feel like
I ruin those moments.
It's interesting because your love language, one of your high love languages, or the top, I think, is words of affirmation. But sometimes when I give you words of affirmation in an intimate way, which is like a meaningful way, you get coy or make a joke about it and kind of push that off. And it's like, well, that's your love language.
Classic self-depreciating. Deprecating.
Yeah. And you
New Zealand male.
Throw a little joke in there when I'm trying to be like genuinely heartfelt. And I'm like, oh, there it is, gone and ruined it again. The arch disruptor.
So this is it. It's a barrier.
Yeah. That you have.
It's fear of being vulnerable. Second to last one. Another activity that you can do occasionally, which basically just really sits on top of a lot of these other ones, which I've called night sky wondering.
Wondering?
Yeah.
Or wandering?
Wondering.
Wondering, okay.
So basically, whether it's a beach or a mountaintop or wherever, backyard, just lie down together under the night sky, looking up at it.
Wondering.
Discussing life's mysteries.
Or
philosophical topics. And just having quite profound conversations.
We used to do that. I've had so many of those moments with my girlfriends and with some guy friends as well. When we used to live in that house in Devonport where we had the roof. And we would put blankets and pillows up there and we'd literally lie on our backs looking at the stars.
Absolutely.
And talking about it was, those are really important. They have really important memories for me. Shout out to all my girls who used to hang out on the roof and have deep and meaningfuls with me. Special times.
But that's emotional intimacy.
Yeah, it formed some really good bonds.
Yeah. Another sort of classic psychological component of that is that you're not looking at each other.
Yeah, true.
Right?
Yeah.
So it can be intimidating.
And just the fact
face to face and everything.
What's above you is unfathomable and impressive and immense. It makes you just feel like, oh.
Yeah.
So you kind of just sink into that. I'm so little and wow, what's out there? That, you kind of do. You can't not open up.
Last tip. exercise, another sort of one-off, two-off exercise. What are you laughing at?
I love it. Exercise. I'm like, okay, cool. We're going to start exercising together. Yeah. One time. We're going to do one walk and then we're done.
Yes. And we have done this exercise and it is eye gazing.
Oh, that one. I thought you meant physical exercise together.
Why the fuck would I be talking about physical exercises in this podcast, Libby Grace?
That's why I laughed, because I was like, this is so left field and way too much to expect. I really hope we're about to start exercising together.
We are not.
Oh, but we could. It would bring us more emotional intimacy.
I don't
intimacy.
Want more emotional intimacy if it requires me working out with you.
Wow.
Eye gazing.
Yeah, we've done this.
Sit opposite each other as close as you can. Look each other in the eyes. Best to pick one eye, left or right eye, or else you go between the two.
Yeah.
Pick an eye, stare at the eye, and do it for 4 minutes.
And try not to laugh.
Try not to cry.
Yeah.
Like, it is so...
It's beautiful.
Emotionally intimate. It's about as emotionally intimate as you can get with your partner.
Mm.
One of my favorite quotes from one of my favorite comedians, George Carlin, he said, if you look into anyone's eyes for long enough, you will see the universe.
Yeah, 100%.
And it is true. You will see yourself. You will see eternity and infinity. You will see everything if you stare for long enough into somebody's eyes. And so, like, it is ultimate connection.
I did
it
once.
Do that with a partner.
I've done it with you a couple of times. We have a friend, Amanda, who did a photography series on exactly that, people staring into each other's eyes, and it was a really cool experience.
Yeah, we did it for her.
Yeah, so... I think she was like, try to get to 4 minutes, and like 25 minutes later, we're still staring at each other or whatever. It was crazy. But I did it another time, which was really profound. And for a lot of people in the room, I was at a festival, and it was one of those yoga classes or experiences where it was blindfolded. And you had to move around the room blindfolded, so you weren't sitting by the person that you maybe came with or that you started off sitting next to. And you ended up moving around the room blindfolded, and whoever you were next to, when they said take your blindfold off, you had to stare that person in the eyes. And it was like, whoa, it was super profound. It was a beautiful experience. A lot of people got really like emotionally quite moved by it. And it was just a complete stranger who you are connecting with on such a deep level. It was like, whoa, it brings up a lot of stuff. It brings up your own stuff. And then you can see how beautiful that person is, and you can see your own beauty. And I guess that's the whole point of it, but it was like a very, very powerful exercise to do.
So yeah, there are 8 ways right there to increase your emotional intimacy. And so with this episode, you know, you now understand what it is, but I think the keys are to figuring out what the barriers for you to emotional intimacy are, and at least starting to work through those.
Mm.
But the only, like, I mean, as with so many things, you might get lucky and you might just create emotional intimacy. But most of the time, we have to consciously create what we want.
Yeah.
You want to be happy? You don't just sit there and wait and hope happy magically turns up. You go and be it, and you do the things. If you want emotional intimacy, it doesn't just magically turn up. You gotta go and do the things. And so here are 8 things that you can literally start scheduling in, consciously creating into your intimate relationships, whether they are familial, friendships, or intimate. And so I highly encourage you all to find this emotional intimacy, to increase it, because it will not only improve your mental fitness, it will improve their mental fitness, it will improve your relationships, it will improve your life. That's today's podcast. Thanks, Libby Grace. Got anything left to say?
No, we've said it all. That's it. We're done.
Game over. See you next week, ladies and gentlemen. Love you all. Bye-bye now.
That was Inside Out with Jimmy Hunt. See you next time.